1.5-acre parcels, is it?
Two, there's more than, there's 2-point whatever, there's, most of them are over 2 points, the two acres.
Well, how were those distributed?
By lottery.
And how many parcels are there?
There was 326 plus 90-some extra acres.
I see. And some of the people who received those have now sold them?
Yes. The village, the EAC Corporation does have the first right of refusal, and then if they don't, you know, won't, of course, they didn't, don't have any money to buy it back, and then they're given a letter of refusal, and then they can sell their lots.
And this has happened, has it?
Yes, it has.
Just, you say that, did the native village of EAC want, I'm talking about the native corporation.
Okay, there's two.
The village corporation.
Two entities, yeah.
Yes, and you call the native village of EAC the, that's the nonprofit?
That's a nonprofit. We are a non, we are a traditional council.
Yeah. Well, the, did the village corporation want to buy those lots back, or was it a matter of indifference to them?
Well, I think it was a monetary.
Well, they didn't have the money.
They didn't have the money.
But if they had the money, would they have wanted to buy it?
They may have.
I see. And you say that the city of Cordova, it's, the city limits don't extend to the new subdivision?
No, they don't. Thank heavens.
Well, if they did, why do you say thank heavens? Is it because of taxation?
Taxation, and they wouldn't have been able to provide water and sewer. I live in a subdivision also called Heaney Creek, and they wanted to annex us into it, into the city limits also, but they don't provide water and sewer for us. We all have wells and septic tanks and.
Well, at the subdivision that the village corporation established, how many people are living out there?
Not anybody right now. A lot of people are living at what is classified as white shed. Those are people that have lived there even before the subdivision.
Well, but they can build houses on the subdivision?
Yes, yes, they can build houses.
Could you tell me a little bit about the native village of EAC? You're chairman, and you're engaged in delivering social services to native people here in Cordova, is that the?
Yes, we do, we have, we classified before as a service area of at least 400 natives, which includes the American Indians, as well as not only the people that are registered to the EAC Corporation, but from all over Alaska. And we have a social service aide that's hired through the North Pacific Rim, who takes care of the fee agent, and she does, also does alcoholism and mental health counseling. We operate under Bureau of Indian Affairs Tribal Operation Grants, and we have had since 1976, and which takes care of our staff. I'm also hired by the village to be the grant administrator. I administer all the grants. And we do social services. I'm also hired by the North Pacific Rim as a community health representative. I take care of, as a liaison person, I take care of all the problems and make sure that people have a line to the Alaska Native Medical Center and the doctors there. I'm also on the Alaska Native Health Board, which is a statewide board, and I work in health primarily. That's my first occupation. And so therefore, and we do have a food bank, which is open to all natives and non-natives. We established that because there was such a need when the migrants came in the spring to, because when they, there's a 30-day waiting period for food stamps, and in the interim time, there is no, nothing that they can, would be able to eat. And we work in conjunction with the Lutheran Mission, who provides some meals and some very few beds for people that come in. And United Way in Anchorage does contribute to our food bank. We also work with the city and in doing all the applications and stuff. If they have some dirty work to do that takes a lot of time and clerical work, then they send it to the village of Eyak. And we do operate, we have a tribal facility that was built by an economic development grant.
And the Native Village of Eyak is a traditional council. It's traditional, not an IRA council.
We were offered the IRA status about 4 years, three, 4 years ago. It was lost in the mails and in Washington, D.C. desks and everything, and so many years. So therefore, and I've asked for a difference of opinion as to the advantages and disadvantages of IRA versus traditional. I have never really received any information, so we're staying traditional.
Yeah.
I think the only thing that we, as an IRA, that we can do is to go into business, whatever.
Yeah.
But we can still do that as a traditional, as long as we stay nonprofit.
Well, the federal people are treating you just as if you were an IRA.
More or less, yes. Yeah. We do have constitution bylaws.
Well, thank you very much. Maybe we could return to you a little later when you've had a chance to catch your breath.
My name is Durante Tabios, Justice Berger. We met. But since Agnes is one of my bosses and she insists I testify, I think I'd better stand up and be heard. My name is Durante Tabios. I'm the executive of the North Pacific Rim nonprofit organization for the Chugach region. I'm also the executive director for the North Pacific Rim Housing Authority. I don't have anything. I don't have a testimony that's been prepared. However, if you'll allow me a few minutes, I'll try to consider the many facets of the Alaska Native Claims Act and how it's affected me. I view it with a lot of mixed emotions because I also am a director of the Chugach Natives Corporation, one of the regional corporations. I'm also a village shareholder. I come from the village of Port Graham. So when I view the Alaska Native Claims Act and what it means to me, I have differences and mixed emotions because I have to consider, as the executive director of the North Pacific Rim, the social services aspects of what the act has provided, and I have to also view the functions of the Chugach Natives as a money-making corporate effort. Just looking at the history and reflecting what I feel the Claims Act has accomplished, I like to think of it in terms of economically, I have to agree, and I'm sure you've heard this over and over, that for the most of us, including the village corporations, financial success has not been arrived at, and most of us struggle. And it's the act itself has been received quite negatively in a lot of respects because all of the manna that was supposed to fall from the heavens along with the passing of the act hasn't come about. But those of us that are more directly involved with the direction of those corporations and have been involved, I guess in part, with the losses or the successes, feel back when it was when it became law, I believe we took advantage, or our leaders, I wasn't one of the leaders at the time, I was very young, took advantage of the position we were in. We said, look, we think this land is ours, the oil companies are coming in to take it over, and oil companies wanted land to put a pipeline through. With their assistance and with the energy of our leadership, we were able to push through a bill that allowed several million acres of lands to be shared with all of Native Alaska. several million dollars to be shared equally amongst the Native community of Alaska, and each given an opportunity to, I suppose, like ARCO and other conventional corporations, to try to make a go of it, build a profit, share that profit with our folks, and continue to be something that would exist long after most of us had gone by, so that benefits would continue to be shared by the Native community. Intentions, I suppose, differed both from the Native perspective and, I suppose, intentions from the non-Native or the government also differed. Also, it's been mentioned, as a consequence, haste in the development of the law, and it's been stated that the law was a unique law, created a lot of conflicts, it created a lot of complicated kinds of issues that we've been faced with since 1971 and have continued to be faced, and we continue to face them. Foremost today is the issue of 1991. But I can just think back a few years ago when the issue of 7I, or the Subsurface Mineral Estates Division, was an issue. Millions of dollars later, we finally came to a compromise kind of agreement. And I guess the bottom line, Mr. Justice, lies, if we're to succeed, is to maintain a positive outlook. Too often we view the machinery, the corporate machinery, negatively. It's, I think one lady, a business lady from this community, said it best of all. We often forget to look at the accomplishments the Native corporations have at least succeeded in, and we view more at the downside. I, as a Chugach Native, feel that we will succeed. We're entitled to 370-some-thousand acres. We have a few million dollars in the bank. We've had our downs. We've been down, I guess, more than up. And in the last few years, I see our corporation moving up. And in more recent months, which makes me feel real good, I've seen the regional corporation at least respond to the requests of the village corporations for assistance in support, or at least allowing, or at least allowing, or requesting that the regional corporation back loans that they need to front, to enter into ventures that will help them move upward. This is something I think that's new, and I think it's good. I see, at least the regions come together. The villages in the past have really not had any desire to work with the regional corporation. I've seen in the more recent years our region coming together, our people coming together, the village corporations working together with the regional corporation. And it's I see a continuity and more of this, and I think we can only succeed if we work together. Agnes Nichols, the chief of this community, mentioned division. Well, I've seen a lot of that, and it's I think a lot of us are beginning to recognize the damage that it causes, and a lot of us are trying to work to change that. Another person mentioned rumor. Rumor mills have been the most damaging to both the village corporation, the regional corporation, and our village governments. Mr. Justice, I can go on and talk about other things, but you know, those are just some of my feelings regarding the land claims. I have other feelings, I suppose. As I mentioned earlier, I have to look at the social implications of the act. I I get paid primarily to provide social services, and I guess I find myself in conflict oftentimes as a director of Chugach. I think the primary function there of the regional corporation is to make money so that it could maintain and provide at minimum a dividend to the shareholders of the people and maintain the lands, as someone mentioned, forever, because those lands, I'm personally believe those lands don't belong to us. They belong to the native community. They belong to my kids, their kids, and forever. The land base of our corporation is the bottom line of what I think we people represent. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Tavios. Yeah, right.
Mike Vigil, Chinega again. I had a thought earlier after everyone's talking. I agree with everyone fully. And what it comes down to is it's you can't say the white man or a Caucasian race. What it comes down to is the business world. And now let's look back at the natives down in lower 48. They were pushed out of their hunting and fishing grounds and forced on lands that they weren't accustomed to using, or that wouldn't provide the food and whatever that they needed to get by on. But I think nowadays, since the business world is so shrewd and cruel, that when the Native Claims Settlement Act was drawn up, and like Larry said earlier, was drawn up with more or less of an intent to fail, that it's just, instead of using weapons to force us off our land now, it's just using politics and bureaucracy and paperwork and they just found another weapon or tool, this Native Claims Settlement Act, to get our land. But that's just my own personal opinion. It's just what it comes down to is eventually us being forced out of the way that we used to live. But that's what my thoughts are in the business world. They found another tool to, you know, take over our lands. Thanks for hearing me.
Thank you.
Gilbert Olson with the EAC Corporation in Chugach region. Another thought that just came to my mind was a stipulation in the land claims of giving a municipality 1,280 acres. This has been resolved to some extent, but by the same token, when the land claims was originally established, in a municipality that involved a native village, they also put a 2-mile perimeter around the city, the municipality, that the native people could not claim. This is one of the reasons that we do not have a land base here in the village of Eak, because we were in the municipality. They claim that 1,280 acres was established for expansion of the cities. So you get a 2-mile perimeter around this city outside the city limits, and then turn around and give them 1,280 acres more for expansion. That sounds kind of dumb to me. Of course, I realize we don't have to relinquish all 1,280 acres now, if I'm correct. But that doesn't mean that that is also going to be a hassle. I don't know how many village corporations are actually involved in that situation, but the number is very small compared to the number of villages that are involved in that situation. And it stands to reason, in strength there's numbers, and 1,280 acres, there's not that many with that much strength to fight it off. Especially after they've already designated a 2-mile perimeter around the city limits of each incorporated city. This also affected our nonprofit here locally, because when it comes to grants to give services and such, your municipality, not only that, but contracts, your municipality for all practical purposes has a first crack at administering the contracts. So when they do, they rake their 10% off the top administration fee, which goes to the municipality, which eliminates the village of Eyak in that respect of managing, getting grants. There are some grants we can get, but there is a considerable more grants that we cannot get, that the municipality, that state of Alaska and federal government give to the municipality rather than the nonprofit corporation, which is a means of support to help operate the nonprofit corporation. So we do not see that money that could be available to help offset the expenses of operating our nonprofit corporation. So consequently, we do with what we have, and it is to me, it's just another form of bureaucracy where, well, you can't get this grant because you have a municipality, and it does hurt us. We have been denied quite a few grants in that respect.
Yeah, that's a good point. A lot of people have brought up the 1,280 acres, but your point about the 10% administration fee is one I hadn't heard before.
No. Thank you, Dory. Justice Berger, my name is Edgar Blatchford, and I work part-time for Chugach Natives, doing business as Chugach Alaska Corporation. The reason I'm speaking is because Larry Evanoff told me, who's one of our board members, I had an obligation to say something. Same thing that Agnes told Durante. In looking at Chugach over the past few years, I've noticed that we've had a tremendous number of people who have served on the board of directors. Days ago, a couple of us sat around and we started naming all the former directors of Chugach Natives, and we came up with 38 former directors of Chugach, and that doesn't count the 12 present directors. And we've only been in existence since 1972, so we have a total of 50 former and present directors of Chugach, Alaska, and that we probably forgotten several people who may have served for short periods of time. But I think what this shows is that there was some instability in the Chugach organization, and it also shows that it was difficult to get people to sit on the board, especially in 1980 1979, 1881, where we had to go out and ask people to run for the board of directors because it was difficult trying to find 12 people to run and to serve. All 12 directors were elected annually at that time. We were going through a very difficult period then. We were rapidly running out of cash. We had not arrived at a land settlement. And with the election of Jimmy Carter, the future of native claims in light of opposition of the environmental community became quite dim. So it was a very difficult period. Now, you know, we've been able to establish some stability using staggered terms and calling for the election of four directors each year rather than all 12. But in the time that I've served on a board of directors, I don't think I can really question the sincerity or the integrity of most of the people who have sought to serve on the board and those who have served on the board. I think that all of us have been determined to work for the good of the corporation and the good of the shareholders and the good of the Alaska Native peoples who are registered to Chugach, Alaska. When I look at Cordova, I'm not from the Cordova area. I see this Cordova has provided most of the leadership for the region. We have three of our villages are closely connected with Cordova. Eyak is right here. Tetitlik is around the corner, and Chiniga is just down the sound. And so I guess you can say that Cordova is the heart of the Chugach region. And from Cordova has come the leadership and the organization of Chugach Natives. And as we look beyond, you know, into the future and Chugach being a corporation, and we have to live with the obstacles and the benefits of a free enterprise entity, I can see that there's going to be some problems in the future, and I can also see that there might be some benefit to the shareholders, although we can't promise them anything except perhaps hope that things will get better, and I think things have gotten better in the past few months. But from the corporation standpoint, we're under a great deal of pressure from our shareholders to provide employment opportunities, which we have tried to do. We own a cannery just down the road here called the Chugach Alaska Fisheries Facility. It's the old Orca plant. We bought another cannery here, but we bought the cannery for the equipment that we could move down to the Orca facility. We've managed to create some, perhaps only a few, employment opportunities for our shareholders, and I think that maybe we have not been quite as successful as we had hoped to be. We look around the region. Cordova, since it's the heart of the region, we can see the development of the Bering River coal fields not too far away, perhaps less than 50 miles away, in the Katela area, and the Koreans are doing some very active exploratory work there. And then we look down around the sound and we have some very good timber potential. But even in the development of the coal fields and the development of our timber potential, we have to realize that a great many of our shareholders live off the sea, so to speak. They either work in the canneries or they fish in the sound area. And if we develop the coal fields or the timber potential, we have to keep in mind that we cannot do so in such a manner that would ruin or harm the livelihoods of our shareholders. So from that angle, you know, that there's a delicacy there that we have to work with. And working with trying to provide something for our older shareholders is a very difficult thing. I've listened to the 1991 tape that was presented, prepared by the Alaska Federation of Natives, And I just don't know how we're going to provide for our older shareholders. I think that under the law we have an obligation to treat all shareholders equally, and the only way that we can do that is to declare dividends from profits generated by the corporation. However, in the Bering Straits region, we see that the White Mountain Village, as described by Charlie Johnson, the chairman of the AFN, has stated that you can create some sort of an insurance plan and all buy an insurance policy for all shareholders, and once the shareholder reaches a certain age, perhaps 60 or 65, they are entitled to a monthly benefit from the insurance plan. But I don't know whether that would be the way to go. I think perhaps the best way to do it would be back to generate profits and declare dividends to all shareholders. Providing for scholarships for our people who want to go to school has been met with some success. We haven't had very much money, and we've tried to generate funds through our associations with the oil companies, and we've been able to create a few scholarships. But I think that Chugach is in a state of transition. We have a land settlement. We do have a very bright or very positive financial or increasingly bright annual report. And I think that the future of Chugach may get brighter. And I think we may be able to provide or to meet some of the expectations of the shareholders. But I'm sure that we're not going to meet all the expectations of the shareholders. And that's about all I have to say.
Could I just ask you, you said that Chugach has a cannery here in Cordova. What other things does Chugach do? What other businesses is it in?
Well, Justice Berger, when Chugach was created, I think, and perhaps some of the people here can correct me, but I think there was a real push to create employment opportunities. I think I may be correct in that. I wasn't around back during the pipeline days. Construction of the pipeline, we looked at opportunities there, and quite a few of our shareholders were able to work in Valdez and up and down the pipeline. But the initial venture in the maintenance of the pipeline, the construction of the pipeline, has led to a joint venture with Morrison Knutson, and we do maintain a portion of the pipeline, and we're able to provide some employment opportunities for some of our shareholders. But of course, we have constraints that are placed on us by the unions or by the employers, and that is we have to hire qualified people. Other things that we've gotten into, we do some pipeline testing up on the slope with a company out of Houston, Texas. That's a joint venture, and provides probably three or four jobs for our shareholders. And I mentioned fish processing. We own some bank stock, and I don't think we've created any opportunities for our shareholders because of that ownership of that bank stock. And our president describes Chugach as being acquisition-minded. And I think that means that what he wishes to do is to go out and to purchase businesses that would provide a favorable return to the corporation, and also perhaps to create some of the employment opportunities that our shareholders have asked us to create.
Yeah. Thanks very much. Well, would anybody else like to say something? We started this meeting at 6. I didn't know that that things got underway so early in the evening in Cordova, but I guess it's a good time to start. It means you finish earlier. But maybe, if you don't mind, we could just take a 5-minute break for a cup of coffee and then see if anybody has... Oh, well... I see. Well, maybe we could take just a 5-minute break anyway and then see if anyone has any last words. Well, now that we've had our coffee break,
sorry.
Maybe I should just tell you that we're spending this week in the Chugach region, and we were in Seward last night and at Tititlac this afternoon. And here this evening, and we're going to Kenai tomorrow, and then to Port Graham, and then to English Bay. Yesterday and today, we've had 30 people from this region, counting those who spoke tonight, express their views. So it's been very helpful, and I've learned a lot. If anybody... who hasn't spoken would like to do so, we'll ask Doric to bring the mic over. And if anybody who has spoken has anything to add, we can do that too. Well, maybe I could just ask Mrs. Nichols a couple more questions, I think we'll see Mr. Blatchford and Mr. Tabios again, but we may not see you for a while, so... you were telling me that in 1971, I take it just before ANCSA came in, what was described as the old town was annexed by the city... so that the native village of Iak was deprived of its land base. Could you tell me a little more about that? Did I get it right?
Yeah, you got it right. It was it was always described as old town. It goes back even to the 1908 newspaper where when Cordova was first started, they said that they moved a lot of the businesses up from Old Town or the or Iak, and it always has been designated as Iak. And so one little triangle down in that area has always been described as Iak. It has the Russian Orthodox Church there, which is the primary church of the Russian of the Aleut and Indian people in this area. Majority, and it was one of the first established churches in this area. It was brought a lot of the icons and church things were brought from Nuchek, which is out on one of the islands, was a Russian post at one time, and of course the native people adopted that and were baptized into the Russian Orthodox faith. And so they established a church down in what we classify as Old Town. Also, a great many people lived in that area, and the Bureau of Indian School was also in that area. And anthropologists and biographers of the Iak history say that that was called the Lake Village, and it goes back many, many years. Even before Guggenheim came in with his railroad and took all the copper out of here. And of course, the Eyak Indians were a tribe of their own that were taken from up the railroad, we always say, as far as Algonac, where a village was established. And then they went down to what they call the Lake Village at Mile 5, and then proceeded to the village, the beach village, which was Eyak, in this perimeter of, or this triangle that we always called Old Town. And so therefore, it came to my attention, I was, I've been involved more in the Native affairs and the people for as long as I can ever remember. And my mother was the reader for the Russian Orthodox Church, so therefore I knew everybody and everybody knew me, and we, it was that way. And so I became aware of a fellow that lived in the vicinity, came to me and said that we need to do something here because City of Cordova is going to annex Old Town. So we put on a campaign of telegrams to Community Regional Affairs and the village, and we got money together for those people that didn't have money to pay the 85 cents. And so therefore we sent a deluge of letters, not only from our area, but we also sent a petition. And like I say, at least 98% of the people there did not want annexation, because we still had open sewers, we still had septic tanks, we still had water, and all the time that the City of Cordova was there, they had never done anything to improve the facilities or anything down in Old Town. And so we felt that it wasn't necessary for them to annex. But the word came and the time came for the deadline, and we were annexed into the City of Cordova. I lived there at the time. I don't live there anymore. I live 2 miles out of town. I got away from the city limits. But and so we, as a group, voted against it, and still we were annexed because they felt that the town of Cordova needed a tax base. And so that's how come we lost that little bit of land that we felt that was ours. And as one of the men testified, there was no lines, no fences, no nothing. I mean, we had a lot of people there, and a lot of Native people had their families and their homes, and which they still do. Does that answer your question?
Yeah. And maybe I could just ask...
just as another point of clarification, too, Mr. Olson brought up the fact that we had to fight for certification. I think one of that reason was that because we didn't have a land base or a piece of land that we called our village, that we were denied acceptance into a land claim settlement. And our village was not named, and so therefore we had to fight. We had two hearings whereby we had to have testimony saying that we were and were the native village of Eyak. And we have the 320 people. In fact, there are some that we probably had more if we'd have been able to have. The time frame was such a short one that we only could get 326. If we'd had more time, we would probably had more than that would be registered to the village.
Mm-hmm. Maybe I could just ask Mr. McCarka, a question. Mr. Christensen raised the issue of sovereignty or self-determination, but he speaks as somebody who comes from a village, I think, that is not from Cordova. And you mentioned self-determination too, and I maybe there's nothing you can say to help me here, but in some of the villages I've been to, you know, on the Arctic Ocean or the Bering Sea, where there's a native village and people are living, more or less living off the land, and they constitute 90% of the population. Their argument is, well, we should be running things here because we've always been here and we're still mainly the only people here. In some places where the population is maybe half and half, like Tanana, maybe it could work, I don't know. Places like Cordova, where it's predominantly Caucasian, I take it, predominantly non-native, it's a little harder to see how it could work. And I just didn't want to leave here tonight without asking you if you had any more observations about that. I know it's hard sometimes to see how all this would fit together, but I was just curious what you...
Henry McCarty speaking. On the sovereignty issue, are you talking about?
Yeah, and well, you said self-determination, yes, and I take it you meant the same thing.
Right. Well, I look at, first off, on the sovereignty issue is that I think that the people should have that particular right to form their own government or run their own governments, because, like I mentioned, the fact that if other countries, towns, cities, municipalities, boroughs, and et cetera, had the right to form their governments, we also should have that right. I don't mean it in the sense that we should be, well, I'll hook in. I've went to a lot of the native workshops and the AFN meetings and all those issues were brought up. As far as the Indian Self-Determination Act, I think we should have that. That fits in together. Self-determination. We should be able to choose our own destiny. We should be able to make our own determination of what we want to do. That restriction has fit in so much. You know, I keep using restriction. We're held back. So there... That's when I say I mean the self-determination. We should be able to have that right to choose our own destiny. I just feel that we're no different than anyone else. But because of that restriction, we are. There's where we're struggling. On this sovereignty issue, we should also have that right. I don't mean in the sense of being a state or anything, but we should... We're no different than anyone else. I don't think that we shouldn't be denied the rights to those particular things that other people had the right to choose. A lot of people have said it. Clean up your own closet or clean up your own backyard before you dictate to me. We want the right and the privilege to that self-determination. And we're no different than anyone else.
Right. Okay. Thanks. Mr. Olson.
Gilbert Olson. You were referring to how the native community and the city of Cordova come under this particular sovereignty, so to speak. It goes back, I don't think there's any one individual here that has ever served on the city council of the city of Cordova. It's not that they haven't had the chance, they're individual people, they do not believe actually individually to be governed that way, so to speak. The native people here have always been pretty much themselves. We are outnumbered by the white people, consequently. This is where, as I spoke of before, being thrown into in a big sack with a bunch of supposedly intelligent people, and they tell you, you learn. The native people, Indians, Eskimos, and Aleuts, are a very independent people. They always have been. They don't believe, so to speak, in a handful of people telling them what to do. I mean, you'll find that even so in individual tribes. They're more basically oriented to one person being a leader, so to speak, and they follow along. Well, this goes back to, as he said about how this relates to the native people of Cordova and your modern government. People, they just sit back and say, well, I don't like this. But they don't want to get involved. We have the very same thing in our native corporations, all of them. You have the very same thing in your lodges. Any lodge you look at, like the Moose Lodge here, the Elks Lodge, Eagles Lodge, any organization that you have, there is a handful of people. You could have 500 members, but there's probably going to be at the very most 25 that do all the work that keeps it going. The rest are just members. The native people are more oriented this way, other than the fact that when the chips are down, then they all get together more so. They all come together when the chips are really down, when things are really hard. I think that they are closer than, particularly in a native village, a totally native village, because they have to be. Here in Cordova, we don't necessarily have to be that close-knit. We are pretty close-knit, but we're still divided. And it's the same. It's going to be the same thing no matter where you go. As long as you find two people together, they're not always going to disagree or agree on everything, so you're going to have an argument. But when you get 326 together, like in our corporation, there's bound to be differences. And there is no way that you're going to keep them all happy. But I agree with Henry. I think, I guess the guy that owns King Ranch, one of the largest ranches in the world, he don't have to answer to anybody, so to speak. I don't know how big it is, but I imagine most of these villages in Alaska are just as big as him. And he's not restricted that much. But the difference is, one man, I'm saying one man owns it. Maybe he does, maybe he is a corporation, but maybe there's only a handful of them. But then the more people you have, the more disagreement you're going to have no matter where you go. I mean, there's people in here that probably have disagreed with what I said already, and but they think I'm right, but they must disagree with me. And it's just human nature. But years ago, we have been interbred and raised in a white culture where the almighty dollar is boss. Well, with the land claims, it came down to dividing the native people with the almighty dollar. So when that happens, then there is always trouble. I don't care where you are, who you are. Even in some of the most close-knit villages, there's disagreements. The only difference is that you never hear about them because they're isolated. There's people that don't like this and don't like that. But still, it's a fact. It's there. Until you get an individual that gets really outspoken, and then you start changing leaders. I mean, you could have a leader for 10 years in a village, and then you get an upcoming young buck, says, I think I could do things better, and then you're splitting the, unity that you had because of this individual. But here we have an absolute different thing because of, well, it happened to the American Indians. They pushed them from the East Coast all the way to the West Coast, put them on reservations. Of course, that's another thing I might say too. So to speak, the land claims was a reservation, only they gave us a choice of how much of a reservation we could have. They didn't give the American Indians that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Olson.
Well, anyone else like to say anything before we adjourn? Well, if not, I want to thank you all for coming and to thank you for the contributions you made tonight. I think it's been a good meeting, and I certainly have enjoyed it and enjoyed hearing what you had to say. Maybe I should add that you all spoke your mind tonight, and to the Chugach Alaska Corporation and NPR both urged me to come and go to these towns and villages in this region because Mr. Tabios and Mr. Blatchford said they wanted to hear what people had to say, the good and the bad, about ANCSA and these things. So I've heard a lot about the good and the bad, and it's been very helpful. Yes? Okay, go ahead.
I personally, myself, would like to thank the Circumpolar region for giving us this opportunity to speak our mind. There has been many times that we have supposedly been able to speak it through AFN and our regional corporation and our village corporations as individual groups. But this has been something that everybody, all of the natives in Alaska, will be able to actually be able to hear more of the gripes and grievances of the land claims. And I think it is a very good thing that we have been heard after 10 years. We have been heard over the last 12 years, but that's all, just been heard. I don't know what's going to come of this. Maybe this is another one of those things that we're just being heard, but at least we're able to speak our mind. And I would like to thank you, Judge, for accepting the position of taking your time to do this also. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Well, thanks again, and meeting stands adjourned, and we'll be off to Kenai tomorrow.
Well, thank everybody for coming. I did make a lot of phone calls, and I did get somebody. I had to get a kind of an overview of everybody. So the young people didn't come, so maybe they're afraid to speak. Maybe they didn't. So
well, some of us are still pretty young.
You should have brought your fishing pole.
Well, we got to be off about 10 or 11 in the morning. Yeah. About just